Okay, so we'll call the meeting to order. Are there any additions to the agenda?
Nope, the agenda is final.
Is final, all right. Is there a motion to accept the agenda?
I so moved.
Thank you, and a second?
I'll second that.
Great, all in favor? I guess raise your hand because we're not all connected sound-wise.
Right, thank you. That was a first by Lydia, a second by Monique for minutes. Thank you.
Okay, and then the September regular meeting minutes, is there a motion to accept those?
I see Erica's in.
Motion.
Great, thank you. A second?
I'll second it.
And Monique, all right.
Thank you.
All in favor, again, raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Wonderful. Are there any oral communications? All right, we're moving right along.
Mm-hmm.
So the next is the Crossroads Park Public Art.
Mm-hmm.
And who's leading that?
I will be.
Good. Scott.
Let's wait while we're figuring out. Okay. Good evening, everyone. For those of you I haven't met, my name is Scott McDonald. I am the city's public art specialist. I work with Laurie and Manette and the whole cultural and economic development team on a wide variety of projects, some public art. I do some planning and policy as well for the city. One of the projects I've been tasked with is the Crossroads Park Public Art Project. So tonight we're going to present the artist selection that was made by the artist selection panel and seek a recommendation. I'll give you information on the project, the artist, some of the staff analysis we went through to make the staff recommendation. And then at the end of the meeting, we will seek a motion at the end of this presentation. Little background on the project, just to refamiliarize everyone on it. This was originally a neighborhood enhancement program project proposal. So this was made by a community member out in Crossroads that wanted a piece of public art in the park. And no more information than that, just we want a piece of public art in the park. We put it on the ballot for NEP, Neighborhood Enhancement Program. And I think it got like the fourth highest votes, and the first three projects were funded. So a couple years went by, Amazon took a look at that list of NEP projects that weren't funded and offered $100,000 for this project. So this project is ideally fully funded by Amazon. And with that gift, we communicated that we would try to get the project complete within 3 to 5 years. So 2024 to 2026 was the time horizon for when we are trying to get that completed. So we're well within it. We won't meet that, 2024 deadline at the early end, but we will be within our commitment easily. And then we came back to the Arts Commission in July with a artist call. The Arts Commission approved it with one amendment of increasing the threshold for artists interested in the project to $5,000. So if they had done a project less than $25,000 in public art, then they were eligible for the project. Next slide. We see this as a mentorship opportunity. So I think this project, as we develop it, because it really is a pilot project for the city, it's really come to be understood as really aligning with our values in trying to lift up, trying to build artist careers, support artists in all phases of their career, So I think this project is really honing in on some good lessons learned, and we will probably try to replicate this in some form in the future, because I think it has a lot of value. It brought so many artists that we don't normally see apply for projects like
That's
this,
great.
Which that in itself is just, we're opening artists up to the idea of working in public art. So mm-hmm. already it's a win in our book. The artist budget of the 100,000, we have 75,000 to go for design, fabrication, and installation. We are pulling out of what would be the normal artist in the normal, in a normal project for the artist, the engineering, they'd typically be responsible for that. And then also foundation construction. So we really want the artist to focus in on how do you design a public art project for a community, which could be entirely new for an artist that normally works in a gallery and they might mm-hmm. make more autobiographical work. But how do you make a work for a community or, you know, at a site? It's really different to think about your art, trying to sell a single artwork to one individual, you know, in a gallery. And with public art, you're trying to sell it to a community. So it's a really different way to look at a project. So we want them to focus in on design, how to fabricate. Many of the applicants certainly hadn't worked with a fabricator before. Mm-hmm. And then how to install in a public place and in a safe manner.
Mm-hmm. Was putting the permitting, engineering, and foundation to simplify it, was that the idea, just to simplify it?
To simplify it, yeah.
Okay.
The permitting is typically the city's responsibility because we are the owner. We do apply for permits on mm-hmm. all of the projects. Okay. So that part is always the city's. The engineering and foundation construction is just trying to simplify. Okay. We could modify that as we learn from this project. Mm-hmm. And again, eligible artists. Could not have completed a public art project over $25,000, and they need to live in Puget Sound area mm-hmm. counties, which there's a long list in the original call that we don't need to get into today. Panel members, we had Commissioner Monique Martinez, Billy Hassebrock, who's the Bellevue Youth Theater Supervisor, mm-hmm. Lily Barnett is an art consultant. She's worked for the as a curator for the Microsoft collection, and then for the last number of years has worked with Meta and specifically in the Bellevue Meta offices. And she's currently a consultant with Meta as well. The outcomes of the panel's work were they reviewed 47 complete applications. They selected 4 finalists for staff interviews. Staff then conducted phone interviews where each of the artists were provided pre-written questions for them to contemplate, and then they would submit that before the call. So that was really kind of the starting point for a conversation, which really focused in on, you know, what do they want to get out of the project? How do they imagine they can interact with a site or interact with a community? Or how do they think their artwork is meaningful for the community? So really trying to get a sense of, are they starting to think like a public artist? What does the city need to do to support them through the project? Because what we're doing with this project is really developing a unique program for whatever artist got selected. Mm-hmm. Based off their skills and abilities. So from the panel selected artist Anna Malowski. Next slide. Anna Malowski is an immigrant to the United States. She was born in East Germany. So this idea of being born in a place that no longer exists, I think is really prevalent in her work, and I think powerful for her personally. She's primarily a glass artist. She has a Bachelor of Arts in glass from the Royal Danish Academy and a Master of Fine Arts in sculpture from UW. this concept of otherness. So that she thinks about that in terms of, you know, being a woman, being an immigrant. She has some other auditory challenges. So just this idea of otherness, I think, is really also a prevalent concept in a lot of her work. Next slide. So we asked all the artists to submit bodies of work that they're interested in exploring. This was an intuitive body of work for her, where she tried to, typically she starts with a concept and then tries to figure out how to illustrate that concept. This was during the pandemic, where she kind of just wanted to see where her creativity or where her material could take her. And so she started working with the choroic glass. And what you see on the left is some examples of those are sold in a gallery in Seattle. And then on the right, she realized as they were sitting in her studio that when the sun would come in, it would refract mm-hmm. and create these beautiful patterns that would change throughout the day. There are different colors, if it's sunlight or if it's artificial light. So in my conversation with her, she really talked about this idea of play and discovery and interaction as being a great equalizer in how the community could get into her work and approach it. And I think more so than the other finalists, she really like honed in on like people having fun with it, which I think is a nice way, no matter what language you speak or where you come from or your feelings about art. If your kids like to play with it, if it's different every time you come by, there's a good, easy way to connect with it. Next slide. Some other examples. On the left, you really start to get to see like a lot of the beautiful color variation you get in the decorative class. And then the right is just a broader sample. Next slide. So we've never done a project like this. So it was important for us to look at the artist, look at their work, look at the material that they'd like to use, and think through any issues that we possibly can, that could be major hangups, could be huge benefits. So our, after doing all of that, our recommendation to the selection panel and to now, once the selection panel has made, taken their vote, staff's recommendation to the committee or commission is the endorsement of the selection panel's choice of Anna Malowski. And driving that are, again, the artist's personal story reflects a lot of the folks in Crossroads of being coming to the United States and feeling maybe the other, depending on where you are. Context is always important. And the potential of the artwork to change throughout the day with light, I think that's still really exciting. The fact that the artist doesn't want to just create giant blobs of dichroic glass, but they have thought about it being used really tactically in their project, so that she recognizes that there would need to be some kind of structure, some kind of metal structure that would then support. So she'd use the dichroic glass in really intentional ways, which I think was a really good way to understand the limits to using glass in a public setting. And then I also did a lot of work identifying artists that could help her throughout the project that have worked with dichroic glass in public art or public places, outdoors and indoors, and could help her understand how to approach fabrication, how to approach budgeting, an installation. So we are confident that we have the resources to help her through the project and so she can be successful. I mean, it's equally important that she feels she is successful as it is for us to get a valuable piece of work for the community. And then again, decorative glass is commonly used in public art. The city of Bellevue does own one piece with decorative glass. It's actually at the Maidenbauer Center across the street. Mm-hmm. By Ed Carpenter. It's in the window of the entrance. Mm-hmm. Next slide. So this evening we are offering two options, one of which is the staff recommended option one, which is that the commission motions to endorse the selection panel's selection of Anna Malowski. There's no other way to say it than use selection a lot in that sentence. And then option two is the commission motions to not endorse the selection panel's selection of Anna Malowski. So next slide. Depending on how the commission votes this evening, we will either start contracting with the artist or we will make a recommendation to the commission at a future meeting. So happy to open it up for discussion, questions, general conversation.
So where will it be in the park and what will it look like?
We don't know that until we go into design.
All right.
The areas we've looked at are we call it the upper part of the park, but the farther east section of the park, the more active park part, where the like splash park is. Mm-hmm. There's the big field there. Mm-hmm. Not like right in the play field because we don't want to create any issues with balls or, you know, frisbees flying. Or just like somebody running in the field and running into it. And then it could be down closer to the youth theater near the entrance. There's a plaza there that we could actually install an artwork in the plaza right outside the entrance. I've been talking with Billy Hassebrock, the Bellevue Youth Theater supervisor there that was on the panel, about if we did something in the park, we could also, since it uses lighting, which is, you know, the youth theater uses a lot of lighting, that there could be some kind of thing that's inside the youth theater as well as outside in the park. But we really are at early stages in terms of finding a location or knowing what it looks like. Yeah.
I just had a question. Isn't the Senior Citizens Center on the east side of the park somewhere?
There is a senior center. It's not a city facility, I don't believe. It's a private
facility. Is it a private facility? But I was just wondering, I think the park, there's a edge of the park that's adjacent to them there. And I think it would be very cool and very interesting for even the senior citizens to enjoy, because I walk that area very often and I see a lot of seniors come down and walk in the park for bits of time when it's a better day. And I think it would be really cool for senior citizens to enjoy art of different calibers and like something like this. It's bright, it's energizing, it gives them, it makes people happy. So not just for the youth or the youngsters, but also something the seniors can enjoy. And I think it would be, I think they would love it.
Yeah.
Great. I think that's why we loved the concept so much is because we could tie it into different areas of the park, or, you know, it wasn't just like a one figure or one piece. It could really bring the park together, add some light, add some vibrancy, because we know that community crossroads, I mean, it's the only place in Bellevue where there's the community center, the park, the skate park, a bunch of services around, and then, yeah, there's just, and then the mall, of course, the Crossroads Mall. So we really wanted to bring it something different and beautiful, and I think we're really excited for Anna to start this.
I have a few cautions, having done work with blown glass, and I would say think about getting it way high up. I mean, I've had people break glass trying to steal it. It's anywhere within, I mean, I'd say get it 12 feet off the ground. So I'll probably have more comments during fabrication, but things that are beautiful, people destroy them trying to steal them. And that's really sad and very true. So I would really be very aware of the downside of the beauty, with that. And, you know, glass is really very resilient weather-wise. I mean, it's wonderful. Color does not fade, but, you know, it has this vulnerability. So, also I would maybe give some thought to, some sort of caging or protection potentially for that reason. Again, I'm talking out of real experience here. And I've had it happen on three different projects. So maybe Bellevue's better behaved than Kent, or better behaved than some of the other places that worked. But I don't know why, but glass really draws that out in people.
Lydia, I think it would be good to, we can have this conversation on the outside of the meeting, but I think it would be good to have a session with you and the artists.
I'd welcome that.
Yeah, because I think it'd be really helpful for her.
Wonderful. Other comments, questions?
Oh, and I just want to say I totally share your caution. I get excited about the potential, but there's just the reality of public places and the crazy things that some people do.
Really crazy. Like take cherry pickers up in the air and kill them. I'm not kidding you, it happened to me.
They were determined.
And I mean, you could be flattered that, it was so really beautiful, they wanted it that badly.
I'm going to feel bad when they don't steal my art. Don't you like it?
So is there a motion regarding this? To accept this?
I think you got
Erica and your buddy there. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Raise your hand.
I'll just raise my hand. Sorry, I'm losing my voice today, so I can't speak much.
Okay. Aye. Raising your hand, we'll do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Set to go.
Now to a different topic, also presented by me. We are kind of cleaning up the collection. So this is probably the commission should think about this as more of a broader effort to kind of look at policy of how we purchase pieces, how things are donated, how things are deaccessioned. And so just keep that in context as we go through this. So we have an artwork in storage. It's been, I'll get into all the details of what it's actually been. Hold on that. Tonight I'll present information and seek a recommend, I'll provide a recommendation, on a stored artwork called, When Now Becomes Then. And then at the end of the meeting, or at the end of the session, I will, seek a motion, for the commission to consider. So a little bit about the artwork, When Now Becomes Then. It's by an artist named J. Seward Johnson II. He is, at one point, he was the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, but it was written out of the will. Early on in his career, he was a painter, then moved on, as you do when you have a lot of resources, casting people in bronze.
Quite famous for that.
So all of his painting or all of his sculptures are actual people that they cast in real life. And then painting the bronze, which is also kind of unique to what he did. And I think if he hadn't done that, we'd probably have a different discussion today. And what's kind of unique about this sculpture is typically he actually paints the whole sculpture. And we'll get into some ideas on why he just chose the clothing as we go through this. The artwork was donated to the city in 2006 by the Shirley family, who's a very prominent art philanthropist in our region. They live in, or the patriarch lives in Medina. Mary Shirley passed away in 2013. But they were and are huge philanthropists. They're the reason that the Olympic Sculpture Park is called the Olympic Sculpture Park. They were offered naming rights on the Sculpture Park. It could have been the Shirley Sculpture Park. They gave the founding gift for that, as well as the Calder piece that is very prominent, lines up with the horizon line of the Olympics, and have will be leaving their full art collection to the Seattle Art Museum, and also have been big supporters of BAM. So the artwork has been in storage since 2006 when it was donated. It's originally, and we don't know the source of this, but it was valued at around 115. We don't know the source of that, or if that was the Shirley's write-off for the donation. But in looking at comparable works of about the same size, same quality, most of J. Seward Johnson's works sell for about $10,000 today for a solid bronze artwork. In terms of condition, it's really kind of a tale of two worlds, where the all the above grade bronze is in very good condition, and then you see the steel foundation that the sculpture is mounted to when it's installed, very indented with rust. And so it's, there's kind of those two conditions that we would have to deal with. Next slide. And just in general, bronze just on its own does require a higher level of maintenance than, say, other metals like stainless steel. So there have been at least two efforts to cite the work in the past. In 2006, staff looked at, identified a couple properties in Robinswood Park. It's unclear why that didn't happen. And then in 2015, staff tried to get it into Robinswood Park and were rebuffed.
By the community? Or?
By the Parks Department. Because of the appearance. And then the original sites, which were looked at after the donation, the sites were not looked at as contingent on the donation. There's now other artwork in that location. So we don't have any kind of site identified. And I think that like really gets to the challenges of accepting donated works is we often don't have a home for them. They're not intended for any specific place. There's also no constituency. You know, they do go through a public process, but because the commission accepts them, but it's not the same as going through an artist or an artwork selection panel that's made up of commissioners, community members, arts professionals. It's not the same process. And so the lack of constituency and the lack of a known obvious site for this work is an issue. The dated appearance, this projection actually is kind to the colors used, and I think it gets back to the name, when now becomes then, and potentially that's why the artist selected to only paint the clothes, because that juxtaposition, that very specific color tones of the pants in particular, are very of the time when the artwork was made and are somewhat off-putting today. The fabrication techniques. Oh, and just more about the dated appearance. It's different. I see this work as being different than like Belgique, which if folks are familiar with the large artwork that was put in the 80s, it does have a dated appearance. It's the artwork that's on 106, just a few blocks away. It's the large stainless steel piece with the colorful, like macaroni looking tops. That is of a time, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also emblematic of Bellevue of a time, which gives it a lot of value, at least for the staff and from what we hear from the community. Mm-hmm. And at this, because it sat in storage, because it has no history with Bellevue, it will look dated, and we anticipate negative feedback from the community, who has ownership over their parks, right? Every community loves their parks, and wants to see things that connect with them, or the place. In their parts. The fabrication techniques are, I mean, we should mention that. I mean, it's pretty cool that they cast whole people. It's unique. And
I feel for them all.
Yeah. And there is somewhere
a plaster cast, but then you create a mold from, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do we know who it is?
We don't know who it is, but somewhere out there, maybe
she might like it.
They may be alive. But we do see, particularly because it is painted, we do see the potential for graffiti as a really big issue. Both painting things on the clothes.
On the tablet,
it just calls out for somebody to tag everywhere on this and potentially, you know, write offensive things. So there's not just the cost that we've incurred for storage for the last 16 years. There's the cost for, moving it from the storage facility in Kent to here to installing. So that's, you know, we're looking at like 20 to 25,000 potentially for that. And the ongoing cost of the additional maintenance.
For something that no one ever commissioned.
Exactly. And because there's no, like it's not emblematic of the site because it's just kind of old and not connected, that could potentially create more graffiti on it. There could be vitriol. And so that there's that potential. And then just weighing all those costs against the value of the art. And value in public art it's really subjective because we're not looking at market value. I think that's one of the factors you should think about, but like, what is the value for the community? And unfortunately, with this donated work, there is none because there's no constituency. Next slide. So staff is recommending to deaccession the work based on the value of the artwork is less than the cost. And again, value to the community is less than the cost to install and the ongoing issues that we imagine will continue. There's no constituency in the community for the artwork. We do anticipate a lot of negative feedback and then the maintenance concerns. Next slide.
Go ahead, Scott. Finish what you were saying. Sorry, my bad.
So tonight we're offering two options. The staff recommended option one, which is a motion to deaccession the artwork. And then option two is that the commission motions to retain the artwork and direct staff to install on city property. In terms of next steps, we will update the commission either way on what we propose to do with the work at a future meeting. There's no reality where we keep it in storage. So with that, I'll open it up for discussions. Ashmita?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I've always pushed for the city of Bellevue adding arts to their STEM program. And somehow this sculpture seems extremely innocent and charming because of its age and, like you stated, you know, what the attire is and just everything about the sculpture. And what came immediately to mind was, if the city decides to retain it and it works for the city, it should be put into a spot which is probably an area where you have and encourage students, artists, middle school programs of art to come around the sculpture to paint, to sketch on top of a little mound hill on with a view, and, you know, where art classes take place. And, you know, it becomes this, you know, it calls out to art teachers to bring their students there and sketch around the sculpture, sketch the sculpture, sketch the view where the sculpture is placed. I mean, I feel there is potential, again, given that it works for the city to retain it and the cost, etc., of taking care of it. I think there's, like I said, a form of innocence in the sculpture, and it's extremely charming in its own way. It's all about how the affordability is, you know, regarding the piece, and if it's even worth the city's while to take care of it. But I could see potential in the sculpture, and I could see it sitting somewhere that could be extremely attractive to students and, you know, to come and just hang out and create that space around it.
I have a question. Sorry for my voice, Scott, but I wanted to ask, for that option one, what do you do to, I'm sorry if I don't have pronounced that word, but how do you sort of
deaccession?
How does that happen? Like, is it something where you can consider putting it up for auction, for sale, or something to generate funds that can the, you know, the council or the city, the commission or whatever, I mean, how we can allocate funds somewhere else? Is that, is there a way to generate funds from the sale?
So typically the city has the, well, the, historically the city has considered four options during deaccession. One is the sale of the work. So that would be an opportunity. Another one is asking the artist if they would trade this work for another one. The artist died in 2020. I think in this instance, we would probably or potentially think about talking to the Shirley family, because it was a donation. And then the last one, or the last two, I should say, is we could donate it to another public agency. So somebody like the Bellevue School District or King County or the state, could accept the artwork as a donation. And then the last one is destruction, recycling, essentially, in this instance.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to have my way with this, I would rather, over destruction, I would go with what Ashmita was suggesting. I think that, yeah, it does seem to have an attractiveness for, seems very student-like. So I like that idea as well, over destruction. So
I would say that our, if we were to deassess the work, destruction would by far be the last resort.
I am just looking at a history where we paid for it to be in storage for 17 years. And what could we have done with that money for 17 years? And it's been rejected, it sounds like, twice at least, for locating in parks, which is the most logical place for the city of Bellevue to put something like this. So I would go with the recommendation to deaccession, which I don't normally support, but I don't see a lot of good options. I mean, in my experience in the municipality, deaccession is a public work, which happens not unfrequently. They usually offer it to the back to the artist first, but that's not an option.
I agree. I think I would, oh, sorry, go ahead. I would probably move towards option one. I mean, I think keeping it just to keep it doesn't sound very intentional for what we as a arts commission want to do. We want to make sure that we have pieces that represent the community and that have a space and tell the story of Bellevue. And this piece, as Scott laid out, does not. It was a gift. So it kind of, I think it would be haphazard to hold on to it just to hold on to something. I think it's irresponsible to, like, the funds that would be used to having to maintain something and also probably just keep it in storage, because frankly, I don't think there's a desire to have this, you know, installed somewhere. I mean, I can see it at, like, Gage Academy of Art, because that seems relevant for that mission and that organization, but that's in Seattle. It's not in Bellevue, and it's not a publicly owned agency. So I would also support what Lydia had mentioned earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, like, even if we were to give this to a school or something, they would have to maintain it and they would have to put some work into it too. And graffiti, again, schools aren't closed campuses after hours. So yeah. Anyone could come in and do anything to it, which would not be great for the school. But I think I'm leaning towards option one of just moving forward with it and kind of getting rid of it. I know that sounds bad, and I feel bad too, because it's just been sitting for so long, but doesn't feel like there's any other option.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yes. I will motion for option one.
Okay. Is there a second?
I will second that.
And we have a second. Any further discussion? So all in favor of option one.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. There you go.
Cool. Now, was that an abstain or was that a vote? And Ashmita?
Ashmita, did you vote?
I did not, because I'm torn.
Yes, that's fine. I just want to make sure.
I hate the idea of destroying a piece of art.
Well, but there's lots of options.
Or my question to Scott would be, and to the city would be, was this piece of sculpture just forgotten, or was it deliberately kept aside for 17 years?
No, they had two different times when they tried to place it.
Yeah.
2006 when you first got it, and then 2015, right?
I'm going to jump into that. That is just the like very formal attempts to place. In the background, it has been an ongoing project. So even though you don't see a 2023 on there, these have been ongoing conversations.
Okay.
Finding a home for it has been, so far, impossible.
Well, the deaccession does not necessarily mean destruction.
No,
that's correct.
That's right.
What about maybe not schools? How about like Bellevue College, you know, where you can find a more responsible set of people, like not children, young children. Excuse me.
But let's verify the vote. We did a vote. All those in favor of option one. We had a
raise
motion.
Raise your hand or what?
Yes, raise your hand.
Everyone in the room.
Everyone
in the room. Monique, Lydia, and online. I'm abstaining.
And Ashmita.
Abstaining. Erica, you are raising your hand
right.
In favor.
Right.
Thank you.
So it will pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very, very much. Good discussion.
Yeah.
I think everyone's concerned about what's going to happen after. So can we get an update of like what happens with the idea?
A thought I had was City of Kirkland has quite the collection of bronze.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, has anyone ever thought to offer it to them?
It could be an option for donation. Yeah. We've never entertained that. Yeah.
I'm just thinking they're already maintaining a whole lot of bronze. And that seems to be their predilection. Yeah.
Now that we have good, strong direction, we can explore a lot of the different options, but that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe perhaps a specialty for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's move on. So we have a guest.
Hello.
Laura, how are you?
Wonderful.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
And you're going to talk to us about Bellwether.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Well, first I want to thank the city very much for awarding us the opportunity to present Bellwether this year. It was an honor. I also want to thank Annie DiMartino, who was our deputy director. She's no longer with PACE, but this was a tremendous amount of work on her part to produce Bellwether this year. And I apologize she's not here today,
mm-hmm.
but I just want to take a moment to really acknowledge and thank her for all the work that she has done on Bellwether. So in terms of a summary, we had an opening kickoff event for Bellwether at the very end of August. I know that some of you were here. We were at the party. We had two fabulous singers, Tiffany Wilson and Roz. And it was just a really great opportunity to get the artists engaged, get people from the city and others that are associated with the project to kick the project off. Our first official Bellwether event was on September 9th. And this was at the Bellevue Spring District. And I just want to share a quote from Christina Medawar, who's the founder and artistic director for the Sustain Music Project. This was the artistic partner for this particular event. She said, "This has been an idea that's been percolating since COVID. I'm so grateful for Bellwether and the opportunity to really dive in and play with AI music and coding." So what was really compelling about this particular event was it was called Algorithms, and it was the intersection of music and technology presented by Sustain Music Project. And it was an innovative concert that featured a diverse musical program ranging from Bach's intricate fugues to a composition composed through computer algorithms and AI. Audiences were immersed in a multi-sensory experience as six featured instruments, flute, clarinet, trumpet, violin, viola, and cello, unveiled intriguing connections between music, math. And what was really cool about it is that it was accompanied by a mesmerizing video project. So it was the making of music and the technology of the music creating the technology that you were seeing at the same time. So that was a really fun event. The second event was September 16th. This was two art installations that were placed at Bellevue College. There were two artists, Cole DuBois and also Arabella Bautista. So Cole's was connotative. It was an immersive installation that brings to life the interconnected, ephemeral, and dynamic nature of all things through the seamless integration of generative dance and generative interactive digital projections. So this was kind of an interesting one because you had this ever-changing reel of really interesting images that were thought-provoking and mood-changing, and the dancers were creating movements and choreography in real time to what they were responding to with the art installation. And then Arabella's project was called Groove, and it was an ode to rave culture, digitally via video poetry combining dance and video synthesis. So this was a really interesting one. The premise of both of these art installations was to have visual images that motivate movement and dance and the different elements of that. So Groove was all about the rave culture. So you had these two dancers that were responding to it, but they also invited audience members to also interact with it as well. And we had this at Bellevue Community College. And it was a really interesting event, having the movement to art, the art to movement, and the audience members participating in that as well. The third event was on September 23rd, and this event took place at Marketplace at Factoria. This event was very much, they're all educational in nature, but this one was especially focused on education. We partnered with DigiPen, and we featured their students in a video game making competition. And I want to share a quote from David Robinson, who is the DigiPen faculty in curriculum development. He said, "Opportunities like this are invaluable for our students. Communicating their vision and sharing their product with an audience and professionals at today's Bellwether event is a critical part of their training. Thank you, thank you, thank you for including us and giving our students a platform to amplify their work." So what was great about this is that it featured 1 to 5 different teams that built video games, and it really put the students in a position to not only showcase how the games work in front of a judging panel, but also in front of an audience where they had to explain how they made it, what the purpose is, what the process is. So it was the art of making technology from an educational perspective, which was more of the focus on the one on September 23rd. And the students were really excited about participating, and they got really great feedback, and there were prizes. Then September 30th was our event at Downtown Park, which was our silent disco. Participants checked out ceramic pieces created by local artist Jahan Ozanian, and they had their headphones provided by our incredible DJ. We also had singer from the opening event, Tiffany Wilson, come and perform. We wanted to have options for people that were dancing in with the headsets. And this was also really great for community placemaking, because doing an event in Downtown Park like this, one of the interesting elements of it was that you could use the park in a variety of different ways. You could be at the park at the silent disco. You could be on a whole other part of the park, and you weren't necessarily, if you were into the disco, you weren't bothered by that. So it was kind of like art making in live, real form. We also had a really great, it was fun. We had this photo booth where people would dance, and we would create these really great loops, and then they would have mementos of that as well. Mm-hmm. We engaged a lot of students, and we also had a big party that everybody was invited to. So it didn't matter if you were someone from the city, someone from the boards, you know, a donor, it didn't matter. Everybody was invited to the party. And it was just a really, really great day. And I don't know if you all remember, but it was raining almost that whole week, and the clouds parted and the sun came out for that event, which was really great. We also, of course, had digital residencies as well on our YouTube channels with artists that presented that. And so the reach for the four events were over 3,000. I want to talk a little bit about our marketing strategy. And in July and August, we did send out major press releases, and we created a media kit for all of our partners. So Bellevue Spring District, Bellevue College, Marketplace of Victoria, of course, the city as well. We created partnerships with 425 Magazine, The Bellevue Reporter, Greet Magazine, Seattle Times, King 5 Kong, Mercer Island Reporter, Bellevue Patch, T-Mobile, and Puget Sound Business Journal. We were also listed on theeverout.com, which is a new site that I'm looking at as well to look for fun things to do. And we also engaged with the Bellevue Downtown Association and the Bellevue Chamber as well. We had our artists take over our Instagram accounts as well. And then what we also did in terms of reach is we engaged Lotus Communications Company. When I first came here, I got them on board right away because I knew we needed a significant digital promotional campaign for this. And so we did a combination of a few things. We had our we had display ads, and we also had behavioral social mirroring. So social mirroring retargeting. So the social mirroring retargeting is essentially we created a slate of social media posts. And what Lotus does is that they take those posts and then they retarget them all throughout. They follow one around online. And that campaign reached over 300,000 people with a 1.03 click-through rate. The national average is 0.07. So we were able to reach more than 300,000 impressions from that medium alone. And then our display ads, which were designed ads for Bellwether, we ensured that we had a very large footprint. We made sure to have a campaign that reached not only Bellevue, but Kirkland, Redmond, Sammamish, Snoqualmie, there are a couple of places here that I'm not even exactly sure what they're called, but the footprint was not just Bellevue, but it was the sizable part of the East Side. And that display, that ad ran, which of course ran for almost 6 weeks, reached over 500,000 total impressions with a 0.09% click-through rate. In addition to that, Lotus was a really great partner because they gave us a tremendous amount of in-kind promotion as well. I know this might sound funny, but radio is still a viable vehicle. What's interesting is that people listen to the radio online. And I want to share with you that they donated to us 381 radio spots, which was a value of $19,000. And they also gave us major 5 commercials on their radio spots as well. So Lotus was a really great partner with this. When we look at the challenges of marketing on the East Side, as we know, there is not really a central database. There isn't a lot. There's not a lot of media outlets necessarily on the East Side. So our strategy was to really have as thorough of a digital campaign as possible to follow people online. We also, of course, had a robust social media campaign in addition to the services that Lotus Communications were giving. Other sponsorships included Amazon. They didn't come in as high as they normally did because they have had a lot of cuts in funding. But we were very honored to do this project. I know that this is an important historical project for the city, and I just want to thank city staff for working with us and the city for the opportunity to do it this year.
Thanks. So I have some questions about going forward,
mm-hmm.
because you have a 2-year contract with an option for the Arts Commission to renew for the coming year. And I have serious concerns given your staffing cutback. Where are we with that?
Well, the staffing cutback was an elimination of a position that was serving a redundancy. I will be handling the programming moving forward. Part of the way that Annie put this budget together was that she had in the budget someone to curate it. But the reality of how the budget was, the reality of how the support system that made Bellwether happen would all still completely be in place. The budget was created, the program was created when there was not an executive director at PACE. Now there is an executive director at PACE. So there was a redundancy in work there. We will be doing programming moving forward, but we will not be doing Arts Without Barriers because that was a grant that was a one-time grant that was not renewable. And as we look forward, I'll be working with staff to make the decision of the future of Bellwether and what that looks like.
I have a lot of concerns. I'll just say that to the board. You know, in the past, Bellwether was run by people who are basically curators. Right. And, I didn't feel terribly connected to the experience this year, and I'm an art commissioner. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that reflects on me or if the communication didn't target well. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear from other commissioners and their experience with Bellwether.
In reading through your reports too, you evaluated each of the different events, and mm-hmm. some were more successful than others,
mm-hmm.
right? So would you recommend looking at all that again?
Well, I have to just pause and say that I really want to talk to staff
okay.
and work with city staff to determine
okay.
what we can do moving forward. I think it would be premature for me to speak to the commission yes. about that because it's my understanding is that Bellwether is a staffing function and I want to respect okay. staff's role for that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
But I think the whole idea with this contract when we gave it a year ago
mm-hmm.
was that we would give more money to a nonprofit to lower the burden and the cost on our staff.
And I think what Laura's referring to is that conversations around whether or not the contract is renewed or continued, that's a staff level conversation. Mm-hmm. What we would really appreciate from commission tonight is your feedback on the event, your overall thoughts. Like, so hearing that you have concerns is a value.
Right. So and I'm asking mm-hmm. the other commissioners how they experience Bellwether. Because I think I've been pretty vocal about my experience. Mm-hmm.
I will say I attended... Oh, sorry, Erica. We're just on the same page tonight. I did attend the Spring District one. I wish I could have attended. I wanted to do the Silent Disco, mm-hmm. But I couldn't attend that day. I think... So I live in that area as well. And if I didn't know it was happening, there wasn't any signs or there wasn't like clear markings that something was happening in the Spring District. So I would just say, yeah, maybe on site day of things could have been improved. Just so to attract the people that are already in the neighborhood that weren't maybe coming for that. And I think for that show specifically, there wasn't enough people at first to start the show. So it didn't start until later. And so that was a challenge too, because I was just waiting around for a while and wasn't sure what was happening.
You know, the big problem that happened that night, which was super unfortunate and regrettable, is that the person in charge of the sustaining the project, I know this sounds completely lame, but it's the truth, her laptop completely crashed mm-hmm. and they lost like an hour. And that hour was the time that they were going to do the dance demonstration and really get things geared up and build momentum for the actual concert. So the event essentially lost steam
mm-hmm.
because of the computer crashing,
yeah.
which is terribly regrettable.
Yeah.
Terribly regrettable.
Was anyone else able to go to some of the events?
Oh, I went to the Silent Disco, so the closing event for Bellwether. I thought it was a really great event as far as having different ways people can participate, but I think also it could have been a little bit more clear that it was, you know, a free public event. I've seen, you know, people kind of walking around the park wondering what's going on. I mean, there's signage and everything, but maybe having like a crew of like people, you know, inviting them to come over, you know, renting the headsets for free, and then even the party itself, I think it looked like a VIP area, I guess, because it's just at a certain part of the park, and And I think it could have had more presence, maybe a bigger stage, especially when the mayor was there delivering, you know, her address as far as, you know, what this event is and recapping, you know, the magic that was Bellwether. I think there could have been a little bit more emphasis on having that be a bigger part of the event. So, and also I think it would, I don't know how feasible it would be, but it would have been cool to incorporate like the Pelote sculpture with the silent disco. I think being able to dance under that would have been really neat because it would combine different aspects of what, you know, the Arts Commission has been supporting and just, yeah, but I mean, that's another talk, but I thought the event was great, and especially having kids, it's something that I felt like we could go to without like being a nuisance if the baby starts crying or my son goes and starts ripping grass out. Like, I think it was really accessible for someone that has to deal with rugrats and children in general. Yeah.
Erica, I so appreciate your comments. I think one of the challenges of doing something at the park, which is such a beautiful park and it's an incredible park.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand and I completely respect the rules of the Parks Department. One of the things that we would have loved to have been able to do was to have a banner and some signage there leading up to mm-hmm. the event, but we were only allowed to come out on site the day of,
mm-hmm.
which makes presenting events there can be a little challenging. But conversely, you have an event like the Ukrainian mm-hmm. festival that happened that filled the park up.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on the internal resources of the organizations that are putting on the events there. But I will say for us, I know we would have had a stronger turnout if we were able to promote more on site mm-hmm. in advance of the, but that's a rule and I respect that rule.
Any other input?
Yeah, I was also there at that downtown park event. Yeah, I think signage, inadequate signage was a bit of an issue, or at least, I mean, only because we were, as commissioners, you know, were getting the emails to invite us or to, you know, let us know that the event was happening. Just as a general public, as a citizen, just, you know, I don't know if I would have had much knowledge about the event or, you know, what's happening there. The kickoff event that took place for Bellwether, which was at, I guess, one of the board members' residences, since it was a small, sort of an intimate event, I think was maybe more conducive to, it was more of a social event, like just getting to meet other people there. But the downtown park event, yeah, I wish there was a way to work around how to market it better. Like if the Ukrainian event that you mentioned, you know, if they had a better turnout, I'm guessing that's probably also because of word of mouth within the Ukrainian community, where they're all aware of the event happening. So would it be, sorry, yeah.
With you, I would have liked to see more follow through on the materials that we sent to our partners to help promote. We sent materials to the Bellevue Downtown Association, the Chamber. It just did not get out to the level that I would have liked for it to have gotten out. What I did try to do was I got a lot of balloons. I put a lot of balloons out there, so we did have signage, but it's also a big park.
Mm-hmm.
So. It would be nice if events that happen at Downtown Park had the opportunity to promote it on site in advance, because that's the best place to mm-hmm. let people know that something is happening at the park, because people are at the park prior to the event happening.
Okay.
You know, from experience of the last 5 years, I feel there are some laws that the city of Bellevue has against putting things like banners and stuff like that way in advance, and I would keep pushing for some form of physical advertisement around the malls way prior, especially during the art festival in July, and I was always told that there are laws in the city I don't know if things have changed, but they don't permit these kind of banners to be put up just about anywhere and everywhere on buses. I mean, buses are private, but I mean, the banners on buses, or even just big flag, you know, kind of banners, across the mall or in the mall or anywhere. There was some kind of a law that City of Bellevue had, in its, the public spaces. So I'm not sure if that law still holds, but I mean, I think we have to look at the bigger picture of not just one event, but how do we tackle this for the future of every other event that we want to do? A lot of the communities have got emails that they send out within themselves, whether it's a Ukrainian or the Indian, and those emails spread like wildfire. So again, that is personal, but how is it that we get something like Bellwether to go across communities and have maybe the communities help to advertise this within, you know, within people.
Okay. Does that give you what you need, Lori?
Lori, I also have some questions about, you know, this past year, Bellwether was organized around digital art for the most part. What are the thoughts for next year? Because we're late mm-hmm. into it, you know, if we're looking mm-hmm. for next year, we're in November. Mm-hmm.
Let's have an update on Bellwether at our next meeting.
That'd be really helpful.
A few of you between okay.
That'd yeah. be great.
Thank okay. you very much.
Thank you for
Thank
coming
you.
Here. Good to see you. Good to see you. Okay. Project grant applications. Who's presenting that?
That's me.
That's you. All right.
All right.
All right. Last item on our agenda. Last presentation for you all. grants. So you'll notice these aren't just art grant applications, these are project grants mm-hmm. this year. Our EAP, eSite Arts Partnerships, are on a 2-year cycle. So we got renewal applications from all of the recipients, and I'm currently reviewing them to make sure they're still nonprofit, they're still doing stuff.
Yes. But the
yeah.
committee didn't have to review.
No, they didn't. Because it is more of an operational support now. And we're still collecting reports from them so that we have numbers so they can get their award this year. But they didn't have to fully reapply. They just had to mark interest in being an applicant again. So this year, well, first, this is an action item. I will be asking for a motion for you to endorse the recommendations made by the allocations committee tonight. You can also choose to abstain or not to vote, to vote not to approve the recommendations. So we had a very big committee this year, just kind of by happenstance. We had 3 arts commissioners and 4 community members. I brought in Eden, who is now the chair of the Bellwether Arts District Community Alliance, to review the Bellwether bonus application.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted an additional eye because we have been working very closely with artists that were awarded this year mm-hmm. for the Bellwether bonus. We've been connecting them a lot with the Alliance, and I think it's been a very successful partnership. So I wanted to make sure Eden got his eyes on them early. I think he had some really valuable notes for the applicants. So that was the review panel. I will be asking for those of you in this meeting if you want to say anything at the end about your experience before we go into the motion. So just if you have comments to close in mind. This year we received the most ever applicants. Usually we get about 25. And we, this year we're 36, so quite a few more. It usually increases by like 2 or 3 every year. So this is exciting. The total request was 119,000. That includes the Bellwether bonus requests.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that out, it was 100,000 total for just project grants, and then an additional 19,000 for the Belgrade bonus. I'm going to shut the door real quickly because we don't need to listen to what I was talking about today.
I'm going to jump in this moment too, and just a reminder that data reflects organizations and artists who are not in the EAP grant.
Right.
They're not eligible to apply for both.
So that's more than we've had for project grants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the most ever.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are not EAP grantees. There was a lot of interest from them in mind, but no, they were not eligible. The allocations committee recommends that a total of 65,000 be allocated to 22 grantees. So like I said, there is a bifurcation here of the grant itself and then the bonus, 60,000 allocated to 8 individuals, so it's mainly artists, and then 14 organizations, and then an additional 5,000 to 3 individuals and 2 organizations for the Belgrade bonus. You have 2 options tonight. You can approve or not approve the recommendations from the allocation committee. If there are any comments, I think we have 2 commissioners online who served on the review panel. I know I got a lot of positive feedback from our outside reviewers who said they had a lot of fun. That it was an interesting process and we want to do it again.
Nice.
We did scare some people away, although they haven't gotten the experience of all of the...
Yeah, the whole EAC.
Yes, that does add a lot of time. But yeah, we had some great discussions. I really appreciate all the impassioned thoughts and opinions. That were brought by the panel.
We kind of had a tough job with the largest pool of applicants that we
have since a lot of no's we have to give out this year.
Well, that means we go and ask for more money. That's
right.
I mean, yes,
one solution.
It does help our always our request for more,
mm-hmm.
showing that the need is ever growing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I always feel also that, especially the project grants are the way we reach individual artists in
mm-hmm.
Bellevue
mm-hmm.
and small projects in Bellevue that sort of, I think it's the most effective way we do it.
Manette, I have a question about the application. Did we have a little survey that asked applicants where they heard about the grant? Because I think the pool this year was really diverse. I mean, compared to the last years, and I'm curious to see like what has changed. Maybe our artist roster, you know, grew, so that's why we got a lot of different applicants and different medias. And so.
I think we do not have that question in our effort to make this the easiest application ever, which we have heard from a few people that it was not maybe the easiest, but in terms of a government grant, this is one of the easier ones. I do think this is a valuable question. I think we can make it.
Put it back in.
Yeah.
You know, you can just throw 5 words, I found it on Instagram or something, and that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I appreciate that feedback. I think that'll be helpful.
And then I also saw we funded, this recommends funding for some people we didn't fund on the last cycle too,
mm-hmm.
which is not like the Bellevue Farmers Market, for mm-hmm. instance. Nice to see them come back and get funding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have some repeats, and we have some repeats that were not chosen to be funded.
Right.
So there, it is really a mixed bag. New grantees,
mm-hmm.
Old grantees, new projects, the same project.
So any more comments from people who were on the committee? Your experience?
No, I was going to say it's good to hear that the other non-commissioned members also had a good experience doing that. So I enjoyed the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. So have you all had an opportunity to review it? Are you ready to make a motion? Is there a motion, Erica?
I feel like someone else should motion. Sorry, I was just adjusting my light, but I was on the committee, so I don't want to motion because I think someone else should.
I would be happy to move approval.
Okay, so Lydia is moving that we accept option one.
Yeah.
A second?
I'll second.
Okay, we've got 2 seconds. All right. Are any more questions or comments? So all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed or any abstentions? No. Okay, great. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. So next up.
Good work, committee.
Yeah.
Next up, so please will go to the city council for schedule for the 4th of December. We'll be working with you.
Okay.
Getting those in front of council.
Okay.
And then they'll be certified and then we'll do the project next year.
Great.
So next on our agenda, you want to move us through?
Sure.
Quick business. I do kind of want to get, for those of you online, if you could send me your iPad serial number, that would be amazing. Feel free to email me if you're like, I don't know where that is. and then in person, Monique, I'm going to grab your seat for you. That's all I have.
Great. And our next meeting is when?
December.
Is it the first Wednesday?
It's the first, yeah.
First Wednesday in December.
December 6th.
December
6th,
okay.
Yes, December 6th. We should be in our regular room again.
Thank you for you.
Unless another answer traveling visit comes our way.
Unless you tell us otherwise.
Thank you for flexibility tonight.
Yes.
Awesome.
Not a problem.
We get to see the far reaches of City Hall.
Okay, so any reports?
No. No, well, yeah, project updates.
Okay.
So a couple of project updates for you today. So we just finished talking about our 2024 grants. So next year, this year's grant cycle, the 2023s are wrapping up. They have to submit their final reports by November 20th. That gives us the time that we need to make sure that they get their invoices paid before the end of the year. So, those are coming in. There's a, you know, there's always a handful that needs help or didn't quite get it done. But for the vast majority, they're trucking right along. We're quite happy to be receiving those reports. In terms of planning projects, so the final report from our Arts and Economic Prosperity Study that we spent much of last year and earlier this year has been delivered. You will receive a full report in December. So that will be December's meeting. We'll get into the details of Arts and Economic Prosperity. But I can tell you that the numbers are really good. National numbers are live. Feel free to Google your heart away on those national numbers. Bellevue exceeded them quite a bit. So the spending of our audiences when they went out into the community was much higher than the national average. Makes sense for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. But we had a particular standout in our out-of-region spending. So our tourist spending was quite a bit higher than of course, the local spending, because there's hotel stays in that, and they're usually going out to dinner at a higher frequency. Mm-hmm. But the comparative difference, the delta between the in-person or the local audience members and the visitors versus the national, the delta was much higher on our visitors. Our visitors really spent. So I will dig into a lot of those details next month. Really excited to share those reports with you. And then an update for our Valbred Arts District. The Community Alliance will be hosting a community meeting tomorrow from 3:30 to 5. They're going to be hosting it at Venture Mechanics Co-working Studios in the Arts District. It's a brand new co-working facility. They have event space. We can see your computer.
Yeah, I'm hoping to
build. Yeah. Oh, there you are. So you can see the Venture Mechanics. We'll share this RSVP with you in the the new glittering unit that was the screen game distracted. Very excited about the Community Alliance. Will give you guys, give everybody an update on what they've been working on. I'll be up on the stage as well, giving a little bit update of what the, how the partnership is working. And what they are really diving into, looking ahead towards next year, light rail opening, new businesses coming online, more ribbon cuttings for creative community members. We're very excited about that. It's a new dance studio opening in the month. So it's nice to see new neighbors coming into the arts district. We received updates today from Bellwether and on Crossroads. The mural program has an update as well. We have 7 of our 8 murals installed. We have the 8th mural is on hold. The sub paint, so the paint that is on the wall that was put on by the Sound Transit contractor, just the gray, has failed.
Oh God.
We're glad it happened before their mural went up.
Yeah.
So
if we would have put murals up,
the mural would be coming down. Yeah.
Sound Transit contractors are having challenges.
So our transportation department is working closely with Sound Transit. They will get the base paint issue fixed before we go ahead and install. Unfortunately, it's the fun one that we showed you. I mean, they're all fun. But the one with the snails that we previewed, that's the one that is delayed. We're really, really fingers crossed, hoping to get that up and running before the light rail opens. But now the trains are like running all the time at full speed. That feels very soon. So, fingers crossed. All of our contracted artworks for 2023 maintenance have been completed. So we are now exploring a couple of emergency repairs. So Temple of the Stones, Amor, and a Possible of Peace, the Gandhi statuette, the library, they all need a little bit extra love. So we'll probably do those on some one-off projects. And then looking into 2024, we'll be talking with you about releasing a larger RFP to get a bigger contract out around our maintenance that we've just used the capacity of our current contract. We need a nice big one moving forward over multiple years to continue our ongoing maintenance work. Our utility box rack program, we've had our first box that is in partnership with the Bellevue School District has been wrapped.
Yeah.
It's got some really lovely fish. The arts district, or I'm sorry, the school district came to council on October 16th. And they were talking about a bunch of successes for the school district in general, but they showed some of our artwork on our box wraps.
Nice.
Students. It was really lovely to see. So, got to see some of that.
Oh, yeah,
that's it for our project updates.
And there's the fish.
And there's our fish.
There's the fish. I'm going to share it with you online, people. Mm-hmm.
So was that designed by a student?
This was 5 artworks. They were mishmashed. I had mixed them together. They were like a watercolor background with stamps of fish that they drew. They had a concurrent project about streams and hunting fish. And they made these fish with like styrofoam. They like carved it into styrofoam. And then I blew them up. They were like this big. Now they're the size of the box. The students got to come and see it being installed.
Yeah.
They were super cute.
Yeah.
So how old were these students?
They're in 3rd grade.
Oh, that's great.
Third graders. They're now in 4th grade because I got this art last year from them.
Quite big.
Congratulations. I'm really glad.
That's fun.
When the teacher we worked with was amazing. It was a great pilot. I think now going back to the school district, maybe letting the like fall settle in, maybe in the winter when things are a little less crazy for everybody, we'll entertain the idea again and go out to different art teachers at different schools and say, hey, look at what we did. Would you like to do this too?
Well, and with positively
things. Right.
I think that there will be some more appetite.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Any other questions, comments from the commission?
I did have a question. Last year we were working on a survey of getting like some more demographic information from the artists.
We should put that in the budget.
I think we're at like, there are a lot of absolutely no responses. Which is common. I was, and then you're going to do it again. It's going to kind of be an open survey for a while, I think, until we're happy with the amount of responses we get.
There's going to have to be some legwork of really tracking down a handful of them. Or descendants, as some have
come. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So there, our collection is not comprised entirely of women.
We also have started posting demographic information for our EAP grantees, which would be interesting. So by November 20th, we have all the reports and all the information on, for the very first time on the boards for the nonprofit, whoever governs the nonprofit on their demographics.
We do gather that that information on the back end, so it doesn't feel like it's an application.
Will we do that on project artists as well, or no? The roster?
The roster, I don't think, has demographic information either. We just did EAP because they have boards and commissions, or however they govern themselves. That's the information that we're gathering on them.
I think there is a point to, or I think there's a conversation we had about going out to the roster and asking. It is a volunteer roster, and we'd be a volunteer participant.
Right.
Of course. But there are places where that might have some value.
I think the only concern, at least for the city, is we cannot make decisions based on someone's gender, race, whatever. Yeah. So we have to be very clear we're collecting this information for internal interests. Not at all to make decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, even, you know, we were doing a project that was BIPOC focused for youth, and when I got the roster, it was really hard to tell who might fit. And so without sending it to everybody, it's like a guessing game.
Yeah.
So I guess it might be more, I mean, for outside contractors or partners. Yeah. But also just for equity purposes, right? Like maybe we need to do more targeted outreach to.
Well, that's what I was thinking, to find out.
Yeah.
You know, are we reaching?
Yeah. But, and it needs to match the demographics of Bellevue entirely too.
Yeah, so. Make sure the roster itself is
reflective.
A reminder, today we have a call closing for, Crosswalk Lab is our project that is moving forward. It's a crosswalk that will be celebrating Pride. We are looking for two panelists from the commission. Lydia, I know you haven't served on one in a while. I was wondering if you'd be interested.
I'm kind of bitter about that.
For art. Is there anybody? We're just looking for two at this time. So one more.
When would it be?
You'll be reviewing in the next 2 weeks, and then a meeting late November, very early December, virtual 2 hours. It's quite a large panel. We have a lot of community members. We have one staff member who's in transportation.
But so far around 20 minutes?
Actually don't know where we are right now with applications.
So probably not too much.
Very, very simple application.
I mean, I would be interested in doing that. I just need to make sure I have capacity, but if it's after next Thursday, then I should be fine. This week's crazy.
That's the two you need.
That's the two I needed. Thank you so much. I think that wraps up. This will be on project updates. This is following a different process than normal. I know it came out of nowhere. It will not be a public art in our collection. Hence not following the Arts Commission public art process. But we do want to involve you and keep you updated.
Good. All right. If there's no other business, we'll say the meeting is adjourned at 6:10.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.